Gorsby on your home of the Irish. 960 AM and 96.1 FM. WSBT.
Martin for three.
Got it!
The Clay Colonials win the state championship.
Notre Dame has beaten number one BC. Over the board come the Irish.
Cubs win!
Her shot is up, no good, and the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske, wow, win the Daytona 500.
The Stanley Cup to the Chicago Blackhawks.
The Irish is upset. Florida State, Notre Dame is number one.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
And we welcome you to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat for this Tuesday. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs. We are in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and getting set for game two of a three-game series between the Cubs and the Fort Wayne Tin Caps. South Bend took the opener of this series 5-3 last night. First pitch tonight at 7:05. Our Jordan Automotive Group pregame show gets our coverage underway at 6:50. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish football insider, and he's back at our WSBT studios in Mishawaka. Sports Beat tonight brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Sport Clips. You watch sports. They cut hair. It's perfect. Sport Clips. It's good to be a guy. Harold Ziegler, Ford Lincoln and Elkhart, 2525 Bypass Road or at z4.com, and by Legacy Heating and Air. Plenty of Notre Dame football spring talk coming up in our first couple of segments. Eric and I will talk a little baseball coming up in our final segment of the 5 o'clock hour as the Cubs had a successful start at Wrigley Field last night as they hung a championship banner and picked up a walk-off victory over the Los Angeles Dodgers. Coming up in the 6 o'clock hour, you'll hear from Notre Dame free safety Nick Coleman, Jaron Grant, Pat Connaughton had interesting nights in the NBA last night, and we'll get into some Notre Dame baseball and South Bend Cubs baseball coming up next hour. And again, we're done at 6:50 tonight due to Cubs baseball beginning with the Jordan Automotive Group pregame show. So, Eric, we have beautiful sunshine here today. I know we had a couple of sprinkles earlier today in the South Bend area, but we have a beautiful night for baseball here in downtown Fort Wayne. And I'll tell you what, these two teams are very fortunate. They have two of the better facilities in the Midwest League to call home. I know you're very familiar with South Bend. I'm not sure if you've been over to Fort Wayne, but the state of Indiana is well represented in the Hoosier State.
I have been to the city of Fort Wayne many times, but not to the Tin Caps facility in particular.
And we're going to have to turn Eric's mic on. And try that again.
We were testing you. I have been to the city of Fort Wayne many times, but not to the Tin Caps facility in particular.
You'll have to put it on your list because they have a parking garage beyond the right field fence, and they have almost like rooftop seating attached to the side of the parking garage.
Oh, that's
so you
cool.
Can enjoy the game from there. So two great ballparks. Very lucky to have these two parks in the Eastern Division, including in downtown South Bend. And on Saturday for the home opener, the South Bend Cubs celebrated the 30th anniversary of the ballpark. Of course, originally known as Kovaleski Regional Stadium. And Roger Parent, the mayor who banged the table for that stadium to get professional baseball in South Bend in the late 80s, was honored. Wow, he had a great group of people honoring him. South Bend Cubs owner Andrew Berlin, Pete Buttigieg, the current mayor of South Bend, was there. We had U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly in attendance, so it was a who's who of speakers celebrating the 30th anniversary of the old Kovaleski Stadium, now Four Winds Field. Eric, we talked a lot about the Irish offense on yesterday's program as the media had a chance to watch a full practice on Friday. Let's get to a little defensive conversation to start today's program. What were you focused on when you had a chance to watch the defensive side of the football during that open session?
Well, I really, you know, again, with them not in full pads, we didn't get to see as much real scrimmaging. So I really try to watch individual skill. I wanted to see who was improving and who was kind of staying the same and who needed work. And so that was real. And I watched the defense way more than I did the offense. especially the defensive line. I watch the defensive line and the safeties a lot because I think when it comes to the bottom line next year in September, October, November, those are the two position groups that have the most say in whether that our projected win total goes up or down.
Let's start talking about players who right now are really taking advantage of the defensive changes with Mike Elko now in charge of the Fighting Irish defense. Let's start with Nick Watkins, almost kind of a guy that's forgotten with all the talk about, for example, a Sean Crawford. But your analysis on Nick Watkins at this particular moment?
Well, I think where Nick Watkins benefits is the switch from left and right corner to field corner and boundary corner. And by that, we mean, because of the hash marks in college football, you're always playing kind of on an unbalanced field on most downs. The left and the right aren't as equal as they are in the pros. So one of the corners has a lot more field to cover. And generally, that boundary corner is a guy that's a little bit more physical, that can take on the big, tall receivers that they try to run into the short side of the field. Think about Notre Dame's team last year, Equanimeous St. Brown, Chase Claypool, before that, Corey Robinson. So those are the kind of guys that boundary corner. Well, with switching from left to right and field and boundary, Nick Watkins, it enhanced his abilities because you had a corner with exceptional speed, but maybe not Sean Crawford speed, and yet in into the boundary, he was physical enough to handle those strong, tall receivers. He also has pretty long arms, so he was better in jump ball situations, for example, with a taller receiver. So, and then again, I mean, he does not look like a guy who missed a year of football, which he did with a broken arm last year. And for him to leap over all those, what are sophomores now, that had so much more playing time, all of those guys have more career starts and more career tackles than does Nick Watkins. You know, he's had a really, really strong spring.
Let's move along to Nick Coleman. We're going to hear from Nick Coleman coming up next hour, making the transition from corner to free safety. As we've documented from day one of spring practice, he has been the starting free safety when the defense lines up. That has not changed as of right now, so he continues to make progress in that transition. Eric, I would assume in coverage situations at free safety, there's not much that Nick Coleman is going to have to learn. That's kind of in his wheelhouse. But I'm wondering, is the big transition him trying to figure out run fits?
Yeah, it is. It's about that. And you say, well, gosh, didn't he have to do that at corner? Not as much. I mean, when you're a safety, you're involved in every play. You know, as a corner, there's times you're just running down the field with somebody and they have no intention of throwing to him. But as a free safety, you've got to make a read at the snap, every snap, whether it's going to be a run or a pass, whether you're going to go running up, whether it's play action, they're trying to fool you. And so for him, you know, with corner, it was very easy. They run your way, you're in run support, you tackle. With free safety, it's a little bit different. The angles are a little bit different. And so that's the thing that Nick Coleman really has been working on this spring. And it's not going to be a finished product by the end of spring, but they've seen enough progress where they say, you know what, this is our best right now. This is our best possibility at this position. Now, not to knock Nick down a notch, but, you know, I think when Mike Elko looked at the film of this team after he took the job, I think the safety position, both strong and free safety, alarmed him the most. You know, we saw all kinds of offers going out to both 2017 and 2018 safeties because there were things that he didn't like about the way that the safeties played, maybe the way that they ran, not enough speed. Well, with Nick Coleman, speed's not a problem. You've got a sub 4.5 guy. So if you can get him to play physical and make good decisions, then you've got a project that's worth investing in that might pay off for you in the fall.
So if a quote-unquote project is your starter at free safety right now, Eric, what do you then say about the backup at that particular position? If an injury pops up, is that one of the spots where there's going to have to be some shuffling of personnel and you're going to have to, I don't want to say groom someone because, hey, they've got people that are trying to earn more playing time at that position, but how much of a concern is it, the backup at that position?
Well, what he's done is, what Mike Elko has done is he's flipped two players' roles that were freshmen last year. Jalen Elliott came in as a strong safety. He is the backup free safety right now. And Devin Studstill, you know, Mike Elko thought he was a better fit at strong safety. So he flip-flopped their responsibilities. So they're kind of, they're not quite starting over, but in some ways they are, just because of how differently the safeties play in this defense. The strong safety is a guy that, you know, sits in the box sometimes. He's certainly, you know, more of a run guy than a man-to-man type defender in pass protection, where you really want your free safety to be able to do that man-to-man protection. And so there's a learning curve for those two. And then there's Nico Fertitta, who would be the third option at free safety, 5'9", 179. Mm. You know, pretty small, but hits hard. But again, Nico has a real nose for the ball, but is he going to be too aggressive in those play action situations? I think that's where Nico is trying to get through his growth curve, is not being so over aggressive that he's biting on every play action fake. And there's a lot of them in a game. If you go against a good running team and a quarterback that's good at being able to hide the ball, you know, that's a problem. So really you have three guys right now. When you look at strong safety, there's five guys really over there. I mean, possibly Jordan Jenmark Heath could play free safety. From what I'm told, he projects more as a strong safety, but we'll see when he comes in. But all the rest of the guys, Studstill, Tranquil, Ashton White, Isaiah Robertson, they're all strong safeties that don't fit the free safety profile in Mike Elko's opinion.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio, 18 minutes after 5 o'clock, focusing on the Irish defense as spring practice continues at the University of Notre Dame. Right now talking about players thriving due to the change in scheme with Mike Elko running the Fighting Irish defense. Dalen Hayes, we probably talked about him more than any other player, and he didn't get as many snaps as we anticipated. But now it's a brand new system and a brand new set of eyes that are working with Dalen Hayes on a daily basis. Mike Elston is now handling the defensive line, and now Mike Elko is the defensive coordinator. When you've had the opportunity, Eric, to watch the number one defense on the field, how often do you see Dalen Hayes?
Every snap. And you see him lined up the vast majority of the time across from Mike McGlinchey, or Mike McGlinchey and Quentin Nelson, or Mike McGlinchey, Quentin Nelson, and a tight end. So they are throwing him into the fire against the very best and testing him every down, every day, every team period to try to kind of microwave his progress. And I would say it's working. I would say we don't see him going backward. And we see flashes here and there. I think it's going to be interesting next week, Darren. We get to see a full practice, I want to say, Wednesday of next week. And I want to see him in the team periods and that more than I want to see it in the blue gold game. I think the true practices simulate game conditions more than the blue gold game does, sadly. So I want to see where he stands in a lot of team periods and that. But you see him playing with more of a comfort level. And I'm really glad that they made this investment. You know, last year, I think Brian Van Gorder at the beginning of the year, I think Brian Kelly was kind of pushing him to play Dalen Hayes more. And he just had a comfort level with older guys that were assignment correct, whether they were the best athlete or not, and he wouldn't invest in a younger player and then take the responsibility of teaching them. And Dalen Hayes is very teachable and coachable. So Andrew Drumbetti's actually been moved to the other side. He's at the big defensive end now, competing for time over there. And that's cleared the way for Dalen Hayes and Julian Okwara to really become pass rushers, work with their hands, work on techniques at the college level that they didn't have to at the high school level. And I think, again, this is an investment we'll see pay off more in August than we're seeing in April.
Of course, I need to throw in the very important blue goal game will be on WSBT
Radio. That's right. Well, I mean, April there are interesting 20, things kidding. With the, yeah, I mean, interesting things with the blue goal game, but it's, you know, it's just terrible when they do the Stableford scoring system, which I'm not sure they will. It's always better when it's a real game. There's been some that have been better than others. You know, last year, maybe we should have taken a cue that the MVP of the game was a punter. Maybe that should have shown us where the season was going.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of excitement in that particular game. Last year, I don't think we had the Stableford scoring system.
We did not. We had a regular scoring system. So that
it sounds like they're going to be broken up into two teams, if I heard Brian's press conference correctly.
That's what he was hoping to do. We'll probably get a better feel for that next week. You know, Notre Dame's spring practice has been really weird, Darren, because there's been a lot of stops and starts, not just in media availability, but in actual practices. They're in a stretch right now where they have one practice in a 9-game stretch and then finish with 3 and 4 days. So it's that is because of the Easter break that's coming up for the players. But yeah, there's been a lot of stops and starts to this. So we will actually talk to Brian Kelly for the first time in a while next week.
You'll have to reintroduce yourself.
I will. I will say I'm with the South Bend Tribune. Nice to meet you, Coach.
Well, again, the Blue Goal game, April 22nd on WSBT Radio. I think our pregame coverage will start at noon, and the game will get underway at 12:30. And Eric Hansen will be right there, ready to evaluate everything. Hey, if we could pull off to get a scrimmage on the air, Eric, by golly, we'd do it, but I don't think that's probably going to happen anytime soon. It's always a thrill to do the Blue Goal game. Sean's going to join us this year as well, so we'll have some fun with that broadcast. You mentioned Julian Okwara. Let me ask you an absolutely 100% unfair question.
Okay.
Who do you think will end up being the better player at Notre Dame, Julian or his brother, who had a pretty good run at Notre Dame but has really blossomed with the New York Giants?
Oh, I think Julian has a better chance because...
Age,
for yeah. one thing. And he's... They're different body types from being brothers. You know, Romeo was thicker. He came in and he probably made the strength coach scared when he walked in. I mean, he came in at 16, 17 years old, and he was built, and he was just a thicker build. Julian is more kind of arms and legs, and he's 6'5", 235 right now. And he's, I think, more advanced in terms of his techniques. Now, they needed Romeo to play earlier in his career. Julian is at the same position Dalen Hayes is. Now, could you play him at the same time? Yeah, you could play him both on third down. If Julian shows that he can be a, you know, if the team decides to run on third down, if Julian shows that at 235 he can hold up and he's giving you a burst off the edge, yeah, you could play them together at times. But Romeo, I think Romeo's best football is kind of ahead of him, and we saw that with the Giants this year. You know, if he had redshirted, that would have been his, you know, he would have been having that kind of season for Notre Dame last year, but they just were in a position where they couldn't do it. They were too thin at outside linebacker, which was his original position, and then he became a defensive end and found a home there.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. Coming up next, since we talked about players that have thrived defensively with the changes, next we're going to talk about prominent players who the jury is still out on. Eric will have some evaluations of players coming up. Also, is Notre Dame still in the Scott Pagano sweepstakes? We'll continue focusing on the Irish defense and spring practice at Notre Dame as SportsBeat continues on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Not near a radio? Catch Budweiser's weekday SportsBeat on the WSBT radio app. Plus, streamed live at WSBTradio.com.
I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Fort Wayne. We have Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune, in our WSBT studios. Let's spend a couple of moments, Eric, on a storyline we've watched develop throughout the spring, and that is a grad transfer defensive lineman from the national champion Clemson Tigers has been in search of a new home. Last month, Scott Pagano visited the University of Notre Dame. He's kept them on his list as possible grad transfer destinations throughout the process. And the ND Insider staff was able to get a hold of Pagano yesterday in a text message. So the Fighting Irish apparently no longer on his list?
That is correct. He's going to choose between Oklahoma and Oregon and make that announcement on Friday.
So that's that?
That's that. It would have been very interesting. I think he would have really upgraded the defensive line. But Notre Dame is going to have to find their own answers on the defensive line and not have somebody fall in from, kind of parachute in from as a prayer. And I think Scott Pagano would have fit in really well and done a really good job. I'm sure he'll help either of those two programs.
Hawaii native down to Oregon and Oklahoma. It appeared Oklahoma was out of the running for a short time, but the Sooners have stuck around. And they're in the final two for the services of Scott Pagano. So does that end all grad transfer possibilities, in your opinion?
I think so. I mean, if there's somebody that's out there that is unforeseen, but it just doesn't make sense at a position other than defensive line to me at this point. They've already got Freddie Canteen, the wide receiver, coming in from Michigan. They are one over on the scholarships right now as it is. Unless it's a guy that could be a potential starter, I just don't think it makes sense.
Back to the guys that will play for the Fighting Irish this year. Our last segment, we talked about defensive players taking advantage of the new scheme put together by Mike Elko. Now let's talk about players that I think you put in the category of being prominent on the team, names you've heard for a good amount of time, that the jury is still out on them, and have they helped themselves this spring? Eric, let's start with Jay Hayes, a name that you brought up a lot last year leading into the 2016 season. Never just found his way into the lineup, whether it was just Brian Van Gorder going with certain guys and not giving younger guys opportunities. Obviously, the secondary started to get opportunities once Van Gorder was let go, and we saw some pretty good freshmen develop into pretty good football players last year. That opportunity never took place for Jay Hayes. Has he improved his stance along the defensive line this spring?
Well, he has, in the sense that he is sharing first team reps at a defensive end. Now, we saw that at a point last spring, and then again, Brian Van Gorder got cold feet sometimes with good athletes and just kind of went with the safer pick, and I think it really came back to bite Brian Van Gorder. In this instance, Jay Hayes, I mean, he's looked solid. He hasn't looked spectacular. And he's a guy who was projected to be a much better than average defensive lineman in college. And either as an interior guy or as an edge guy, he was probably built for the 34 defense more than the 43. You know, he was a good defensive end in that 34. In the 43, you know, he has qualities of both end and tackle, but he's not a guy that really can drop in coverage easy if you decide to do his own blitz. He's not a guy that shows incredible quickness off the edge, although he has really good power on the edge. But he kind of needs to bring it right now. He's got a real opportunity to establish himself as the number one guy and an asset on this team. And when we talk about Notre Dame not getting Scott Pagano, as we run through this list of players the jury's out on, not surprisingly, a bunch of them are in the defensive line.
Well, Eric, just listening to Brian Kelly's comments from Friday, I got the sense that on the defensive side of the football, They're going to use people in certain situations that give them the best chance to succeed. It's not just going to be the same 11 guys out there and you're going to try to figure out a way to get the job done. They're going to use people and try to get the most out of those players. So there's going to be a lot of people probably having a chance to play, just depending on the down and the distance and the situation in the game. Okay. What's best case for Jay Hayes?
The best case for Jay Hayes is to be a first and second round or first and second down guy. My skepticism about being able to use as many players as Brian Kelly envisions is we've kind of heard that song before, and tempo teams kind of mess that up.
Sure.
That you can't get the person off the field. But if Jay Hayes is solid on first and second down and a guy that can give you some Isaac Rochelle type production in the against the run and give you a little bit of a burst in the pass, I think Notre Dame would be very happy with Jay Hayes.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. It's 5:36 on this Tuesday evening. This is my opinion. There is no one on the football team, to me, that has more to prove than Jerry Tillery along the defensive line. He is a name that has been highlighted. It has been a name that has stood out for a couple of years as a player that has a high ceiling. We saw flashes of goodness as a freshman. I didn't see enough flashes last year as a sophomore. You had the ugly incident or two against USC to wrap up the regular season. That was just truly a huge downer for the way the season really transpired for Tillery. Am I picking the wrong guy? Is he your guy that really has a lot to prove? Is he going to be just another guy, or is he going to be a difference maker on this team?
I think you absolutely circled the right player. I mean, he's going to be a junior, so I don't think we're being too hard on him. 6'7", 308 pounds.
Whoa.
He played nose guard as a freshman. They moved him over to the Sheldon Day defensive tackle position last year. He's back at nose guard this year, tag teaming with Daniel Cage. And I think Daniel Cage is a pretty good player that can give you half a game worth of snaps. So they don't need Tillery to be a guy that plays 60 plays and plays them excellent, but they need him to play 40 plays pretty good or 35 plays really good to be that complement to Daniel Cage. Really different body types, 6'7", 308, and 6'1", 329. And Daniel is really powerful. Can either one of them dictate double teams, Darren? That's kind of the question you ask.
Right.
And right now, I don't see that from Tillery. And that's what he's going to have to do. I think to a certain extent, Daniel can because of his power, but not through a full game. And that's what you need. I think Daniel can hold the point at nose guard, so that's half the battle. But if you don't command double teams, then teams are going to be able to run on you. And so that's where Jerry Tillery is so important to the evolution of this defense. And I think Jerry holds himself to a really high standard, and he wants it as much as anybody. So I think he's going to worked very hard, but he's been kind of a puzzle. He's really a different athlete at that nose guard. And Jerron Jones was able to make that work as a tall nose guard. We'll see if Jerry Tillery can do it.
If Daniel Cage had Tillery's height, I don't think we'd be talking about this position right now.
We would not. Daniel Cage would be, you know, we would be talking about where is Daniel Cage getting drafted. He
right.
just doesn't have the height to go with that incredible power. You watch him. I mentioned this before. They have this blocking sled or sled drill where they have to hit the sled and kind of lift it up. And nobody comes closer to capsizing it like Troy Nicholas did than Daniel Cage. He is the most powerful guy when you see that particular drill.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio, talking about prominent players on the defensive side of the football for the Fighting Irish. The jury is still out. Where do they stand right now? Jonathan Bonner, help me with where he's going to fit in on this football team. It seems like that his responsibilities are much more than they were last year.
Yeah, he is playing the old Sheldon Day defensive tackle position. So it's Bonner, Michael Dutredway, and Elijah Taylor right now at that position. He's 6'4", 284. When you look at both Bonner and Micah Du at defensive tackle, they are two guys that if you had a mini combine with vertical jump and standing broad jump and those kind of tests, they would both test very well. For Bonner, it's about translating that into actual football tackles and football skills. And that's, he's been a good support player, but now he's asked to be a frontline player. I'm not sure if he's ready for that yet. And if he is not, you are going to see Myron Taigavalia-Omosa. You're going to see Darnell Yule. You're going to see some of those guys getting a shot to move into that rotation.
Don Crickey's got some challenging names to work on during the offseason.
He does. A lot of hyphenated guys. A
lot of hyphens. Eric Greer Martini, what a football player he has been against the triple option. He seems to, unfortunately, disappear against spread offenses. Is there more of an opportunity for Greer Martini this year?
Well, right now, he's a starter. You know, he's 6'4 and 240, and he's wanted to be a full-time player. He always felt like all he needed was the opportunity, and he could show coaches that he was a guy that could be every down against every kind of defense. And he's going to be tested. You know, he'll be tested more as Notre Dame kind of gets into the middle of its schedule next year as if he's still the starter. You know, Tavon Coney at 6'1", 235 is a guy that diagnoses plays pretty fast. He's going to be pushing him. You've got Asmar Bilal, who bounces between that Buck linebacker and Rover. Even a better athlete than either of those two. So it'll be interesting to see how all this plays out. But Greer showed Brian Kelly late in the season that he could be, if he was just settled into one position rather than being the jack of all trades, that he could be a starter for him. I'm curious how his speed differential match up against spread teams. If he's going to be able to cover the ground that he is supposed to. Again, I think he's really good in play diagnosis, which gives him a half-step advantage over some people. But I need to see it against a team that's not a triple option team.
Final person I want to talk about, and I think this is a player Irish fans need a little more insight on, because there was a lot of people talking about Devin Studstill when he picked the University of Notre Dame. Got a chance to play at the safety position as a freshman last year. But yet when we put together this segment, prominent players who the jury is out on, you put Devin Studstill on that list. Why did he make this list?
Because, Darren, last year he started almost a full season at free safety. So you made that investment in him.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you bring in a new defensive coordinator, he says, you know what, I don't think he's a match for free safety. So you flip him over to strong safety, but he's not the number one option there either. Drew Tranquil is when Drew isn't playing the Rover. I just haven't seen a player that I thought was leaps and bounds or even significantly better than last season. I see a guy that's about the same as he was last season. And that's where I kind of start scratching my head and saying, okay, does he not fit in this defense? Did he peak too early?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a lot more learning going on? Did playing in a different scheme at a different position, is that a complete loss for him and he's starting from scratch? That's what kind of has me scratching my head about Devin Studstill. Why he hasn't, you know, why is Nick Coleman having a better spring than Devin Studstill, for example?
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. We're brought to you by Budweiser, Sport Clips, Harold Ziegler, Ford Lincoln, and Elkhart, and Legacy Heating and Air. Eric, you did a feature recently on Kofi Wardlow, final player to sign in the class of 2017. Interesting, only a couple of organized seasons of football on his resume. Is it fair to put Kofi in the category of being a project, or is he farther along than that?
Well, athletically, he's very gifted. He is a guy that was a standout basketball player in Washington, D.C., and came to the realization that a 6'3 power forward wasn't going to play in college very much. And so he came out for football his first time as a junior and has a lot. I mean, he was very productive for a guy that didn't play the position, didn't play football other than a little bit in the backyard as a kid. He was really productive. I had a chance, like you mentioned, to talk to him. Intelligent kid. He's getting it. He's working on things. He's watching the top defensive ends in college and seeing their pass rush moves. So he's doing a lot of things on his own. So he's a guy I don't expect to make a dent this season, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was able to get on the field and do some things just because he's a really, really good athlete. And again, when you only have 2 years under your belt, you know, there's a lot of learning ahead of you. It's how quickly he can learn. But again, Darren, I mean, he played in a really good league. He played in that Washington, D.C. Catholic League. I think it's called the WCAC. So he was seeing Division I athletes in most of his game. Played against IMG Academy. They had a road game down to Bradenton. So he went against Robert Hainsey, the freshman offensive lineman for Notre Dame. You know, his team lost by 3 touchdowns, but, you know, Kofi was a factor in that game. He belonged against those Division I type athletes. So athletically, I really like him, and he seems to be working really hard, so I wouldn't write him off. But I would more expect 2018 and beyond for him to become more of a factor.
Eric, final topic I want to get to in this segment. It is a recruiting topic, and that centers around Christian Turner, a 5'10", 185-pound running back. Notre Dame hosted Turner on Wednesday. He's a Georgia native, 29th best running back in the country, according to 247sports.com. But Eric, Turner picked Michigan over Notre Dame. How big of a loss is that?
Well, I think he's a good, solid running back, 5'10", 185. You know, Notre Dame already has one running back in the class and Marquis Stepp. So they're trying to get somebody else that they really like that has a little bit different skill set than Marquis. I think it's more of a big deal because it's Michigan than the fact that he's an elite running back. I mean, he's the 29th best running back. Usually you don't get too upset over those types, although, again, Notre Dame must have seen something that they liked in him. And we've seen this spring, these recruiting rankings are way off in relation to what these kids' offers are. Just some of them haven't been evaluated. And so you get these kind of screwy rankings where these elite programs are battling over the 29th best player at a position. But, you know, getting another kid out of Georgia would have been big. But there are still some other good running backs out there. And to have Marquis Stepp in your back pocket, I think, is really a plus. But, you know, if Josh Adams has a big year this year, you've got to think that he's going to be thinking about the draft.
Sure.
And then, so you'd like to have 5 running backs on your roster. Dexter Williams is getting to be an upperclassman. So you want to keep those running backs coming. Who's going to be your next difference maker? You know, who's going to be the next Josh Adams?
And Eric, with more emphasis being placed on the running game at Notre Dame, that's only going to help you down the road.
Absolutely.
Running backs are going to see that, hey, Notre Dame is back to running the football again.
Absolutely.
He's Eric Hansen. I'm Darren Pritchett. Budweiser's weekday sports beat on WSBT Radio. We'll mix in some baseball conversation coming up, more spring football talk coming up at 6:07, as you'll hear from Notre Dame free safety Nick Coleman. More on that transition from corner to free safety. Sports beat on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Along with Eric Hansen from our WSBT studios, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Fort Wayne. The Cubs and the Tin Caps play game 2 of their 3-game series tonight at 7:05. At 6:50, it's the Jordan Automotive Group pregame show. South Bend has won 2 in a row, going for 3 tonight against the Midwest League affiliate, of the San Diego Padres. Baseball this afternoon, the Detroit Tigers won again. They edge the Minnesota Twins at Comerica Park 2-1. And a good pitcher's duel underway right now in Cleveland as the defending AL champion Indians are taking on the Chicago White Sox. The game right now is 1-1. As the Indians bat in the bottom of the sixth inning, Francisco Lindor, the exciting shortstop for the Indians, hit a solo home run off James Shields in the first inning. But Shields has been really good today. Five innings, two hits, an earned run, a walk, and six strikeouts. 86 pitches, 49 strikes. Not throwing a lot of strikes, but I guess effectively wild today in Cleveland. Carlos Carrasco pitching for the Indians. He has given up a home run to Todd Frazier in the fifth inning. Carrasco, six innings, four hits, one earned run, no walks, five strikeouts. The White Sox off to a 2-3 start, trying to knock off the Indians today. In Chicago last night, it took a while to get the game started, but the Cubs unveiled their World Series championship banner and then went out and beat the Dodgers 3-2 on a walk-off base hit by Anthony Rizzo in the bottom of the ninth inning. So even though the Cincinnati Reds are playing really well right now, and we'll see how long that lasts, it's not expected to last very long. The Cubs are off to, Eric, I think a pretty good start. The target's now on their back. I guess it was on their back last year. Now the world championship target is on their back. With the way they handled last year, I don't think being world champion is going to really affect them. I don't think it's a team that ever feels the pressure. It's just one of those young teams that is very, very confident, and they just go about the business, and they don't worry about anybody else.
Yeah, I think the onus of the 108 years or whatever without a World Series is more of a burden than, you know, being the World Series champs and having to defend that. And
I agree.
They do it more like they're attacking it rather than defending it. And you know, you look at them and you just say, man, that's a good team. Where are they weak? And even though I know that some of the fans are a little bit frustrated that Bryant and Rizzo aren't hitting 400 individually, I think they are together right now, but those guys are going to come around. It's really interesting. I thought yesterday with John Lester, I wanted to see how the Dodgers did in the running game against him, since St. Louis had some success in the opener. And he burned through a lot of pitches. He went through 100 pitches in six innings. But there was a caught stealing by Franklin Gutierrez and no successful stolen bases against him. So whatever the weird thing about not throwing over to first, it didn't bite him last night.
I think people take too big of a lead and then they hesitate, worrying about that Lester might throw over there once.
Yeah, that he's going to get over it against them.
I mean, I get taking your normal lead and just take off when he goes into his motion. I think that's the best way to go about it. To go an extra step or two, I think it brings hesitation into what you're trying to accomplish. What's coming up in the Tribune, we'll tell you next on WSBT.
Weekday Sports Beat on your home of the Irish. 960 AM and 96.1 FM. WSBT.
Here's a home run ball. Going for it is Fuller. He's out there. He catches it. Touchdown, Notre Dame.
Jackson with a spectacular spin move. And now the no-look pass to Zach Ardish with a two-handed slam.
Adios. Two-run home run. Gleyber Torres.
Kaiser look. Timing pattern.
Caught. Touchdown, Notre Dame. Corey Hunter Jr.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Hour number two of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Fort Wayne. Sean Stiers back at our WSBT studios. And we are getting set for more Fighting Irish football spring conversation coming up in just a moment. You'll hear from free safety Nick Coleman. Interesting nights for a pair of Notre Dame players in the NBA last night, Jaren Grant and Pat Connaughton. We'll get into some Notre Dame baseball and South Bend Cubs conversation later on this hour. We're all done at 6:50 due to the Jordan Automotive Group pregame show that gets our South Bend coverage underway on 96.1 FM WSBT. Major League Baseball this afternoon, the Tigers picked up a 2-1 win over the Twins at Comerica Park. White Sox and Indians are still 1-1 in the sixth inning. The Indians have knocked out James Shields. with one out in the fifth inning. But the White Sox and the Indians are tied at one right now at Progressive Field in Cleveland, Ohio. We'll keep you updated on the progress of that game as the White Sox try to knock off the defending AL champion, Cleveland Indians. Well, we've got a perfect night for baseball. There's not going to be any concerns about rain tonight as we have pretty much blue skies with a few clouds mixed in, a bright sunshine here at the ballpark. So unlike last night, about an hour before first pitch, we had a little rain. That is not going to be a factor tonight as South Bend and Fort Wayne square off once again. All right, Sean, we got to get to a little Notre Dame football conversation, and we're going to focus on Nick Coleman. Quite a story, the 6-foot junior cornerback has now been moved to free safety, and from what we've been told, the transition has gone very, very well. So now an opportunity to hear from the new free safety of the Fighting Irish. And it all started during the exit interviews after the 2016 season when Brian Kelly brought up the idea to Coleman that maybe it's time to think about moving to a new position. How about free safety? So what was Coleman's reaction? Here's what Nick had to say recently.
It was definitely something different. I wasn't really expecting to hear that, but like, you know, at that point I was just, you know, we're just, and we came off, you know, a 4-8 season. We're trying to do anything, look anywhere possible to, you know, come up from that, you know? So I accepted it with open arms. As soon as Coach Elko, as soon as he was hired, I gave him a call. I saw what he was about, and I just tried to, just dive into that relationship with him. And I'm still trying to do that, and just attack safety as best I can.
I like the creativity of the coaching staff. Mike Elko thinking outside the box. Hey, the game against Texas, it was a tough one for Nick Coleman at the cornerback position, but it's almost like a fresh start for Coleman getting this brand new position. And if he can figure out the run fits, you know he's going to be okay in the pass coverage portion of being a free safety. But hopefully this is an example of what we saw from Mike Elko at Wake Forest, and that is the ability to take players, find their strengths, and then use those strengths to the advantage of the defense.
Absolutely. And that's whatever personnel you have on your roster, you always want to be able to do that and try to adapt to them and not necessarily try to cram them into your system sort of stubbornly. And, you know, we also, Darren, spent a lot of time yesterday talking about the two Notre Dame women's basketball players who are transferring. And, of course, we've talked about Matt Ryan and his decision to leave the men's team as well. And, you know, a big part of those decisions came down to disgruntled players about how they did or didn't fit into the whole, you know, the grand scheme of things going forward. So to me, it's nice to hear a guy like Coleman who's embracing change and a new opportunity, switching positions because it's something that's going to potentially benefit both him and his team. He didn't just pack up and bolt because Brian Kelly said, hey, we don't think you're going to fit here. These other guys are a better fit. They're going to be in front of you on the depth chart at cornerback right now. What do you think about this change? And so instead of just jumping ship and getting mad because he wasn't going to fit in where he was recruited and came here to play, he's trying to adapt, and he's looked pretty good at it this spring at safety. And it's a position that was thin on some depth, the numbers and that whole thing. And, you know, we're probably going to see more of Drew Tranquil at Rover. So he's given it a shot, and he's looked pretty good at it in the process.
I think we can talk about depth all day, and you're exactly right. But I tell you what, the last couple of years, they've been in need of an upgrade at the starting safety position.
That's true, too.
It's been an area of inconsistent play. I think we all anticipated when Max Redfield picked Notre Dame that there's going to be one of your starting safeties for the next 4 years. And you know what? It just didn't work out, and he had every opportunity to be the guy last year, issues off the field, and that opportunity was taken away from him. In fact, his spot on the football team was taken away. So without Redfield, he had to push Devin Studstill on the field as a freshman, and now Studstill's battling for playing time at the safety position. Now when parts get moved around, you can see there's going to be a chance for him to play. But right now, I don't know if anybody at the safety position feels ultimately comfortable after what we saw last year.
No, that's very true. And I think we're going to see some mixing and matching, and we've talked about it specifically with Tranquil and Asmar Bilal at the rover position, and then, like you said, where Studstill fits based on who's playing there, and there's a lot of upside for this position. This is definitely a position in flux, and we're going to see, I think, at least through the fall anyway, it continued through the spring and through the fall, some moving parts back there.
Devin Studstill, Drew Tranquil, Ashton White, Jordan, Jen Marquis, some of the other names that you'll be hearing for the strong safety position. Now let's hear from Brian Kelly, the Fighting Irish head football coach. He was asked recently why Nick Coleman is a good fit at the free safety position.
Gaining the athleticism that he possesses at that position, somebody that really can track the ball, you know, a guy that can play the middle of the field, that really can cover some ground and some space back there. You know, if you look at our safeties, we've got some, you know, some physical safeties, certainly, but, you know, profiling somebody that has corner skills playing the safety position, you can imagine that, you know, he brings a different skill set to the position.
Brian Kelly on Nick Coleman at the free safety position. With Coleman going there, you see the seats get moved around a little bit. As you mentioned, Sean, Drew Tranquil is a player that can spend time at strong safety and also that rover position. You know, I've watched film of the rover. I'm just kind of interested to see it on the field with gold helmets in that particular position. I know we've heard about Asmar Bilal, Drew Tranquil being guys that can play the rover position. So when Tranquil plays the rover, you can see Studstill getting back on the field at the strong safety position. But if Coleman can handle the free safety position, I think, doesn't that open up all the other things that could happen at other positions?
It would kind of seem that way, because then the free safety position is more the coverage guy, whereas the strong safety is more your guy who's going to come downhill and kind of be that thumper safety. So if Coleman can play there, then you're right. It gives them a lot more options at the strong safety and the rover positions based on being able to mix and match and all that kind of stuff. If he can't, you still have some guys like Jalen Elliott, Nico Fertitta back there behind him, but it does kind of change the whole complexion of that position if he's not able to. But based on what we've seen so far, and granted it's still the spring and, and there's a long way to go, but when you talk about what you heard Brian Kelly saying there, the coverage skills and the speed that he has, this is a guy with a lot of speed. He has pretty good instinct as well. And when you look at his build compared to the other guys back there, he's just 187 pounds. You've got Studstill at 198, so just 11 more pounds. But then Jalen Elliott at 208, Drew Tranquil at 230. So you would expect that Coleman would be the guy who can sort of fly around back there just based on the athleticism and his body type.
You know, it doesn't hurt when you've got a guy learning a new position at free safety and the defensive coordinator is in charge of the safeties.
Yeah, that's true, too.
The guy who knows the defense better than anybody else, the guy who's bringing this defense from Wake Forest. Oh, by the way, Nick, as you learn this position, the guy that knows this defense as well as the back of his hand is in charge of making you a better football player. And that's also opened up the opportunity for Todd Light just to focus on the cornerback position. And he stated recently that having now someone taking care of the safeties, which is a totally different responsibility from teaching corners, he now has more time to do individual film study and individual work with those young cornerbacks, which, my goodness, when you got a guy that has done the things that Todd Light has done at that particular position, having him now focus on his strength, it's just a huge bonus for the entire football team.
Absolutely. And when you look at just the way the whole staff is comprised, just what you talked about right there, and you've got Chip Long and all this sort of blossoming, burgeoning talent at the tight end position, for example, and Long coaching the tight ends on the other side. And then you bring in Tom Reese as well to work with the quarterbacks. And then you've got Brian Polian focusing specifically on the special teams. I just think that all the right pieces seem to be there right now. All the moves that Brian Kelly made, and it's really just in the short term, anyway, paying a lot of dividends.
Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett with you, SportsBeat on WSBT Radio, talking about Nick Coleman, the Fighting Irish free safety. And here is Nick Coleman on what he believes he brings to the free safety position.
Anytime a corner switches to a safety, he's automatically got an advantage in, you know, athletic ability. No knock to our safeties now. But, I mean, it's definitely, you know, guarding a different bunch of guys. You know, you're guarding tight ends now, the big slots that we have. So, yeah, it's definitely easier to just move around and work in, you know, the entire field rather than, you know, just your core. So.
Well, if you have not been with us throughout the spring, Coleman's been running with the first team from day one of spring practice, and it's probably one of those things when you first saw it, because we see so many things in the spring that is just tried and it kind of goes away once you see fall practice get underway. So sometimes you take things you see with a grain of salt, and seeing Coleman out there with the first team, it's like, huh, that's kind of interesting, but is this reality? Is this a mirage? Well, my goodness. John, this has turned out to be not even close to a mirage. This may turn out to be one of the better stories on the football team this year. I mean, you talk about guys you didn't expect to be in a prominent role, possibly on the football team, especially with all the young corners that are on this football team. Nick Coleman's name is probably way down the list of players that many people thought would contribute to this year's football team.
Yeah, it's definitely a name that was off the radar coming into the spring.
Wow.
Not one that we were talking about at all. And just a new outlook for him, and just a lot different for him when you got a guy with his speed and athleticism to start off with, and then he starts at the back of the defense, being able to see the play develop and coming toward him rather than trying to run with a receiver, you know, one guy most of the time, and that whole thing. And it's been pretty cool to see him back there, and we're going to get a chance to see him a couple of times next week. We'll get a full practice, and then, of course, the blue-gold game, and that's where it's going to be fun to sort of, hopefully fun anyway, to see how this whole thing has come to fruition by the end of the spring, just what he looks like when it's out there and it's live.
Are you cheering for the offense or the defense?
I think you got to cheer for the defense just to see if they can keep up, you know, because we've talked about the offense being so far ahead. The defense is definitely the underdog in the blue-gold game, right?
After last year, I'm cheering for the offense to score.
Well, there's that, too.
I'm going to be greedy, at least for the spring game. I want a couple of big plays and have some fun. All right, here's a couple of more comments from Nick Coleman. Here is Nick talking about how the transition is going.
I've enjoyed it so far. I feel like it's a lot more action, a lot more opportunities to make plays. And working with Coach Elko has been great. He's a good teacher. It's just been good so far.
And one more soundbite from Nick Coleman on if the move to free safety is a fresh start in his mind, because, again, in September, he had some rough moments at the cornerback position.
Well, ever since we got back in here in January, everything has been feeling like it's been a clean slate, new life. And then with the new position change, I just, you know, accepted it with open arms, tried to attack it as best I could. and like I said, I think it's been a great transition. And, you know, I'm pretty happy where I am, because, like I said, it's so much easier to make plays, because I feel like every play I have the opportunity to, you know, make an impact on the game. So with that corner, you know, you only get thrown to, you know, maybe 6 to 10 times a game, and then you get run to maybe, you know, maybe a little more than that. But other than that, you're just running around with a guy. But now you're kind of, you know, in the box, reading the quarterback. He's reading you know, what you do, to, you know. So I think it's a lot more fun, to be honest. So,
Sean, as you start to think ahead to the final few practices in the blue goal game, is there anything in particular on the defensive side of the football that still is on your list that you're wait and see mode right now? You still have to gather more information. You have to see something with your eyes more before you truly buy into some of the things that you've heard this spring.
Well, that's a good question. I think the biggest concern that I still have is on the defensive line. Just what the heck is going to happen up there? And I think that's what everybody's kind of looking at, because there's so much just unproven, so many unproven guys up there. Jerry Tillery has all this experience, but is he actually going to blossom into the guy that we think that he can be in his third year now? And I don't know if we're going to find that out necessarily in the spring. I think that's the biggest thing, is what's going to happen on the defensive line. You've got Jay Hayes, Andrew Trumbetti, of course, Daniel Cage injured right now, Elijah Taylor injured, but you've got Jonathan Bonner and Micah Dutredway and Julian Aquara and Dalen Hayes on the outside. There's guys with promise there, but I think we're a long way still at that position group. I was going to say not position. Obviously, there's four different positions I talked about there. Position group, we're a long way from finding out what they're actually going to be come next September.
I know we focused for so many years, pass rush. When's there going to be a pass rush? Where's it going to come from? And unfortunately, we've been disappointed the last couple of years. You know what? That's on my list, but I think it's time to fix the run defense. You just can't be in the 70s in the national rankings in rush defense. History shows you do not go to where you want to go if your rush defense is not in the top 25 in the national rankings. And the Irish have been stuck in the low 70s, right around 73 for the last three seasons. So, yeah, I want to see a pass rush. Yeah, I want to see more turnovers. And that's something that's being emphasized during the spring. But, I mean, it's time to stuff the running back. It's time to take away the running game. And that would be something that I'm looking for once we get to the fall. If you can stop the run, control the line of scrimmage, then all of a sudden the outlook of the season, from my estimation, is going to look totally different.
Yeah, and I think, I think Daniel Cage is going to go a long way along those lines. The Cage, Tillery, and then the tackle position as well with Bonner, Dutredway, Elijah Taylor, whatever happens there. They've got the bodies. It's a matter now of if this new scheme is going to be enough to at least bump them up. I mean, they don't have to be just the Steel Curtain or the Purple People Eaters or, you know, any of those great defensive teams of NFL lore. But, I mean, they don't have to be that. They just have to be good enough. If they're even in the top 40 in run defense, that would be a massive improvement.
If we had Randy White, Harvey Martin, I guess that would be okay. The old doomsday defense.
There you go. I'd take that too, yeah.
That wouldn't be bad. Wouldn't be bad at all. So that's Nick Coleman. Fighting Irish free safety continues to work at his new position. 6:25 is our time. Sean and Darren with you. Jaren Grant, Pat Connaughton. Interesting nights last night in the NBA. More baseball conversation to come as Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. This is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on WSBT Radio, Michiana Sports Leader. He's Sean Stiers back in our WSBT studios. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Fort Wayne. Cubs baseball gets underway at 6:50 tonight with the Jordan Automotive Group pregame show. First pitch at 7:05. We'll talk about South Bend in just a few moments. NBA in the focus right now, and right now the Irish have basically three players that have been in the NBA throughout the season. Demetrius Jackson has been up and down between the Developmental League and the Boston Celtics. Now, I've not focused a lot on his season, but it just seems like every once in a while on Twitter, you see he has a big game with the Celtics developmental team.
Right.
So that's a great sign for the Marion grad. But Pat Connaughton has not had much of a role with Portland the last couple of years. Jaren Grant, of course, started with the Knicks, traded to the Bulls during the offseason, and his opportunities have been hit and miss. But, Sean, you take a look at the Bulls last night. They absolutely destroyed Orlando, 122-75, to keep their playoff hopes alive. And Rajon Rondo was a little banged up. Jaren Grant got an opportunity, and you take a look at the numbers and you have to say to yourself, you wonder why maybe he has not gotten more of a consistent opportunity from Fred Hoiberg this year. I know it's one game, but the numbers he put up, you could take those every night and win quite a few basketball games.
Yeah, I mean, he's averaged a little over 16 minutes and just under 6 points per game, but I mean, He had a great game last night. 17 points. He's 7 of 12 from the field in 28 minutes. Hits a couple threes and 11 assists as well. So a double-double when he gets that start. And then you're kind of thinking with all this trouble that Rajon Rondo always sort of seems to be, are the Bulls maybe better off with Jaren Grant going forward when you look at what he's able to do in the really one of the first big opportunities he's had all year?
Well, everything you hear, Rajon Rondo's a pain in the rear end, so it's amazing people keep taking a chance on him. Won a championship with the Celtics. They made it work. Of course, they had Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce leading them to a championship, and Rondo was, you know, a pretty good player on that particular team. He wasn't the superstar, but he was a very, very nice secondary piece. I was shocked the Bulls took a chance on Rondo. You brought in Jaren Grant from the Knicks. It looked like he would have the opportunity, but Rondo kind of shut that door a little bit. But I think at least when you see that type of performance, it keeps the door open when Grant becomes available once again that somebody might take a chance on the former Notre Dame star.
Absolutely. Because the other side of it is if they do stick with Rondo, then if Grant, especially if Rondo's hurt again tomorrow in the regular season finale, which they have to win. If they win, they're in the playoffs. So if Grant has another big game, and who knows, maybe it goes into the playoffs a little bit. You kind of build yourself a little trading chip there, potentially. Maybe he goes someplace else and gets a more expanded role. So, big opportunity for him one way or another.
Rajon Rondo is the Milton Bradley of the NBA. A guy with talent, but he is so much of a pain in the rear end. He brings so much drama. I wonder if it's worth it. Remember, the Cubs had Milton Bradley for a little while.
That's right. That's probably a pretty good analogy. Because when he was in Boston, when you had Paul Pierce and Garnett and those guys, he was just starting his career, so he was kind of more willing to kind of take that secondary role and just be the point guard and not have to try to take on so much. But once those guys moved on and he sort of took over, it just became obvious really quickly that he wasn't worth the trouble at all.
Now let's go to Pat Connaughton. I have to admit, I'm not an NBA guy. I'm a baseball guy. So I'm still waiting for Pat Connaughton to play baseball. I want to see that 95-mile-an-hour fastball in display consistently. I just want to see how good he might be able to get. But it always seemed like the dream was to play in the NBA for Pat Connaughton, and I totally respect that. But with Portland last year as a rookie, didn't get much playing time. That's held true so far this year. Now, Portland has wrapped up a playoff spot. So, Sean, they gave Connaughton opportunity last night, and I almost feel guilty talking about his baseball career because what he did last night when given the opportunity was pretty doggone good.
Well, I know. And again, he's 6 of 12 for the field, 15 points. Didn't have the double-double like Grant, but he's got 3 assists, 4 rebounds, and one of his buckets was in the waning seconds when Portland was trying to make a comeback and they ended up winning. He pulled them within like 3 points, I think, and then they ended up getting the winning bucket a possession or two later. But again, he's buried on the depth chart. You got C.J. McCollum averaging 23 a game, Alan Crabbe and Evan Turner, 10.7 and 9.1. So, you know, and I'm like you, I've kind of been wondering how long Pat Connaughton is going to be content, whether his dream was to play in the NBA or not, to sort of ride the pines in the NBA and not have more of an opportunity. He's 24 years old now. Is he going to kind of get that itch and maybe go out and see if baseball gives him more of an opportunity, kind of like Jeff Samardzija, where when he was splitting his time between baseball and football, he was still very raw as a pitcher and a baseball player. But once he got into the minor leagues, got to kind of work things out, devoted to baseball full time, we've seen what he's become, and you kind of wonder, is that the direction now? Because 24, he's kind of becoming an old man as far as if he's going to give baseball a shot or not. He's probably going to have to make a decision here pretty soon.
All I know is, could you give me Pat Connaughton's agent's number? Because his agent got a 6-year deal out of Baltimore, and then a little bit later on, Connaughton gets drafted and has an NBA contract. So he's double dipping. I mean, this is a beautiful thing.
No kidding.
For Pat. His agent did a heck of a job.
He worked it out. And I don't know, do you know, I can't remember now, is there anything in the NBA contract that stipulates he couldn't still potentially go pitch in the summer for a minor league team, anything like that?
That's a really, really good question. That might be something the Trailblazers put into the contract.
Right.
Now, this is something Connaughton said in 2016, quote, "In my mind, I will pitch in Major League Baseball. I want to achieve that. That's a dream of mine. I don't know when it will be, but a lot of pitching is based on how many bullets are in your arm compared to your age." Now, that's an excellent point because, kind of like Samardzija, when he started pitching at Notre Dame, he didn't throw all those innings in summer ball leading up to going to college.
Right.
So I'm sure his arm felt awfully good when he started his professional career. And Connaughton went on to say, quote, "It's always on my mind. The way I look at it, one of my main mantras my whole life has been, until someone forces me, which I don't think will happen, I never want to give up on one of them, because think about all the kids who want to be a pro in one of them, let alone two of them. In today's day and age, where so many kids are taught to specialize so early, I want to show them you don't have to at a young age, high school age, college age, and hopefully a professional age," end quote. Very interesting insight there from Connaughton.
Yeah, and when I think about Pat Connaughton, it makes me think about another baseball basketball guy, and that was Danny Ainge. And I actually have I have a baseball card of Danny Ainge from the early 80s in a Toronto Blue Jays uniform. Mm-hmm. He actually played a little bit of Major League Baseball for the Blue Jays and obviously made his name as a basketball player and now in the front office with the Celtics. But again, you know, which just Pat Connaughton, just a very athletic, very skilled guy, and it's pretty rare that you're able to excel at both, especially basketball and baseball, just because of the timing of the whole thing. But I'd love to see him get more of an opportunity on the basketball floor, because again, we saw when he had a little bit of an extended opportunity last night. We see what he can do. Mm-hmm. Had a really nice game. And so it would be good to see both of these guys we're talking about, Connaughton and Grant, get into a situation where they're in more, not just a supporting role, but a much more starring role.
I'm not sure how many dreams he has, but he's doing pretty well on the baseball and the NBA dreams, because he's doing some amazing things right now. And when will the pitching opportunity come? Could be several years, could be in the next couple of years, who knows, but it's nice to have options in two professional sports.
No kidding.
And the Pacers have a chance to make the playoffs with a win if they beat Atlanta. There's some possibilities that if the Bulls or Heat lose, they can get in, and the Bulls need to beat a bad Brooklyn team to get into the postseason. With all the drama surrounding the Bulls this year, it's almost kind of shocking they're going to make the playoffs. Remember all the drama about communication in the locker room,
mm-hmm.
and Fred Hoiberg might be fired, and here they are, went away from heading back to the NBA playoffs. And oh, by the way, they're 4-0 against the Cleveland Cavaliers this year. Just keep that in mind if that's the first round matchup.
Yeah, but LeBron says the regular season doesn't matter, so.
Amazing how the theme changes depending on the situation.
That's right.
It sounds like they left last night's game, went down to Miami a little early, or there was a trip to Miami that occurred a little early so they could have a little fun, a little zest for living before they wrap up the regular season.
That's what gets me about all these rest days and the players resting during
off.
The season. Yeah, they just take a day off. And I want to know, if they're going to take that day off, okay, are they getting docked that game's pay, though, on the salary that they're making? My guess is probably not, but I think it's a little bit overboard where we are with all that stuff right now.
How about the fans paying triple digits to watch reserves start basketball games?
Yeah. Well, at least Jaron Grant and Pat Connaughton gave them their money's worth last night.
That's exactly right. All right, Sean and Darren with you. We'll talk some baseball next. It is now 19 minutes in front of the top of the hour on WSBT. Just a couple of minutes left in our program, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds, Sport Clips. You want sports, they cut hair. It's perfect. Sport Clips, it's good to be a guy. Harold Ziegler, Ford Lincoln and Elkhart, 2525 bypass rotor at z4.com, and Legacy Heating and Air. Sean, a couple of thoughts on the Irish baseball team. You had a chance to watch them over the weekend as you did some PA work at X Stadium.
Yeah, you know, they're not lighting the world on fire by any means, but after starting the season just 1-8, they're a lot closer to 500 right now. They've won 12 of their last 21 overall, including 5 of their last 6 in ACC play after sweeping Georgia Tech over the weekend. So they're 13-17, and you know they've still got some work to do. They're in the lower third of the ACC in batting average, fielding percentage, and in ERA, but the upside of this whole thing is the ACC is expanding its postseason tournament from 10 to 12 teams this year. So as of right now, Notre Dame would be in, and that's the most important part. Just try to get a little bit better, and here in a month or so, put yourself into a position to be in that ACC tournament.
Well, it's a pretty young team.
Yeah, so, and that's a big thing, too.
Yeah, they're growing. Just would like to see the offense take a couple of steps forward. The offense has been a little down the last couple of years, but I know they've got some young players that they feel really good about that can help that offense over the next couple of years. Meanwhile, the South Bend Cubs won again last night. They won 2 in a row, and they beat Fort Wayne 5-3, so they didn't score over the first 32 innings. And now they have scored 12 runs over their last 17 innings. From what I'm told, they hit the ball extremely well in spring training, but you saw the first couple of games, that doubleheader. The offense was a little quiet up in Comstock Park.
It absolutely was, and I was a little scared. But again, I mean, all these guys, they're still relatively young, too, and they're just moving up from Eugene in that short A season last year. And the arms that I saw that West Michigan threw out there, they had a lot of velocity on the mound, and they spotted that velocity as well. They were throwing a lot of strikes, and so it's going to be interesting now once you get done at Fort Wayne today and tomorrow, you guys go back up there again to see how maybe things go the second time around.
Yeah, we got some business to take care of up
right
there in that ballpark. Sean, good talking to you. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, you too. Have a good call.
Thanks, Sean. Sean Stiers from our studios. I'm Darren Pritchett. South Bend Cubs baseball is 2 minutes away on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT.